Next report is a discussion on a report from Bogdan Group by John Halls, CFO.
I will introduce Richard Holbein with Bogdan, who you all know, and Richard will go over the latest quarterly performance of the plan for the first quarter ending March 31st, 2015. You have a written copy of it that's been handed out, plus the material is on your diligent material. Go ahead.
I want to say thank you, Doug, for the work.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. If I could get you to turn to page 2 of the quarterly report, take a look at what happened in the overall marketplace. It was a phenomenal quarter for international securities, particularly in Europe. S&P had a slight positive return. But if you notice, the Russell 3000 was almost twice what the S&P was, which is primarily due to mid and small cap securities just blowing through the roof for the quarter. But you get to the one-year time frame, and international securities are basically flat to non-existent. The S&P had a nice double-digit return, and did the rest of the market. Bonds were up bigger than their coupons, so that tells us that all of a sudden we've had a little bit of a shift in the yield curve over the one-year time frame. On page 3, the interesting thing about what happened in the marketplace was if you were in value or have growth at a reasonable price types of portfolios, you tended to lag, and quite frankly, somewhat in the larger cap value area, negative returns. It was all of the growth and portfolios, the expectation of growth, and to some degree, it's almost like going back to 1999, where people were paying up for expectations of what was going to happen, not for the underlying earnings that were in place at that particular point in time. Conservative portfolios would have lagged. Aggressive portfolios over the last quarter did very, very well. And that also translates into, because of the significance of how much better they did, translates into what happened over the one-year period. It was a growth-biased equity market. On page 4, just to take a look at what happened from the standpoint of the various sectors of the marketplace, utilities were slightly off, but the real underperformance was in the area of energy. Energy for the year had a significant sell-off, down 11.8%, which is going to tell us when we look at our numbers that we're probably going to be a little bit under performing on an aggregate basis because of the fact that we do have exposure to energy infrastructure. The smaller capitalization area in particular, energy really got hit, down almost 40%, 39.2% for the trailing one-year time frame. If I could get you to move to page 8 for just a second. I said earlier about the overall bond market. The quarter was a significant quarter in general for the bond market. If you had international securities, you weren't too happy because, quite frankly, the dollar was very, very strong. International securities were under significant pressure during the quarter. And we're also under significant pressure for the full year. On page 9, this is what I alluded to earlier. The strength of the bond market didn't come from the coupons that were being generated, but from the fact that we've had a shift down in yield over the last year. From the standpoint of where the market is, it's a one-year time frame, a big, big drop. So we're down now in a significant, I would say, area of risk. It appears as though over the last month and a half, there's been a slight rise in interest rates. So the next quarter, we very well may see some negative returns in the bond allocation. I get you to move to page 12 and 13. It's really just quite a picture of the overall diversification of the plan from the standpoint of the various asset classes that we're invested in, and from the standpoint on page 12, and then on page 13, from the standpoint of the various portfolios that make up that asset allocation. The BBH Core Select is the largest portfolio that we have, and that is a conservatively run portfolio with a value bias. Harbor International is the second largest portfolio. As we saw earlier, having had a significant upswing in international securities, we're hopefully expecting that's going to be a positive return to the plan. Real estate and the Metropolitan West are very close to each other, from a little over 11% each. So I think we've got significant diversification among the various portfolios at this time. If I could get you to move to page 15. About a year ago, we had significant variance from the standpoint of target allocations. We brought that into balance with increase in the real estate area. It's paid off very, very nicely, and that real estate had some significant returns over that time frame and are now a little bit above the allocation range. Because of the energy infrastructure problems that I alluded to earlier, energy area in general, MLPs lagged. Because they lagged, now they're a little bit underweight. And I think it'd be a good idea, quite frankly, at this point in time, to maybe sell high and buy low, take some assets out of the real estate portfolio and put them into the MLPs. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that can be done without any type of resolution because it's a rebalancing with staff. Am I correct on that?
I think as long as it's in compliance with our allocation,
right. And that's what we did last year when we were rebalancing into the real estate area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we breach our allocation, that's a different deal. But staying within it, I think that's normal.
Right.
I could get you to turn to page 19. This is the overall performance of the plan for the year, and kind of in line with what was we saw earlier with the actuarial report. We slightly underperformed, had a 4.2% return for the trailing year. 3 years, 8.25%, and 5 years, 8.4% on a net basis. And that was also pointed out in the actual return that we do have some gains from the prior five-year time frame that are being taken into account with the calculation for contributions that would be recommended.
This also points out our inception date, which is 5.59,
The inception date only goes back as far as we were able to get data from the prior consultant.
But again, if it is consistent, and I suspect it'll be fairly close. We're still under their 6.5, is my point.
Right.
For a long period of time.
That's approximately 10 years back, as you can see in there.
That takes us through the big dip and so forth, but that's our target is net 6.5 there, and we ain't there.
Not for the last 10 years.
Well, but I mean, that back to 2005, that includes an extended period of time to where we were just locked into one type of investment.
Right.
And I think you have to adjust that out either mentally or however. I mean, since we started diversifying this portfolio, we're hitting that 6.5 target plus.
I totally agree with you. That was the problem with our prior deal. We were 60% S&P and 40% fixed income, and that was it. Yeah. So, I don't disagree at all with that.
Yeah, and one strategy. I'm not so sure that if we didn't take that back several years before that, you would have achieved it, because that was during 2005, was during part of the roll-up. 2005, just 2 years later, all of a sudden was the big downturn. So we did get hit with the second worst equity market of the last 100 years in this 10-year time frame.
Is this 8.41? Is it net of fees? It's net of fund fees, I assume.
It's net of any fees that are paid out of the fund. So where you saw that
we're paying 78,000,
we're paying for us, we're paying for the actuary, right. We're paying for the custody, you're paying for audit, all of that is included.
Included here, because that's about 40 basis points, is that
right?
So the 8.41 is net of the 40 basis points of cost.
Right. See, a lot of the fees actually within this, because now we've got mutual funds or whatever, all of those returns are net of fees.
Yeah, no, I know that, yeah.
Excuse me. And we saw earlier, I believe, where the real growth in the market over the last year occurred on the growth side and the expectation side of equity securities. Our particular managers that we have, if we look back and we have information on 2010, our 2008 did very, very well during that time frame, but during this big run-up, having more conservative portfolios, it lagged somewhat. So our total domestic return at almost 4% is significantly below the market return, the index returns, because that includes all of the growth portfolios also. The Brown Brothers Harriman, a return for the trailing year of 5.1%, puts them way down below the S&P 500 return of 12.73. If you go back with them for 10 years, they will have done much better than the S&P. But during the time frame here more recently, they've underperformed, having that, like I said, conservative portfolio. The same thing with the Royce Premier Fund. They had a flat year. Latest quarter was up almost 3%, but still a significant underperformance from the standpoint of the small cap index.
Richard,
yes.
Excuse me. We've got 30% of our assets in BBH.
Yes.
That underperformance really had a heck of an impact.
Yes, it did.
What are your thoughts?
Well, when we chose BBH, there were two portfolios that were being presented, and the committee decided to use just the BBH portfolio. One was a little bit growth-oriented, one was value. We decided, well, BBH had such, tremendous downside protection during 2008 that let's just go with them, because if we get into another downturn, we're going to do better. My thought is... once we come out of this, we're probably going to want to rebalance that into something that has, exposure both from value and from growth. So that when we do have a downturn like we've had recently from the standpoint of conservative value type of portfolios versus growth will have some participation on that other side. Well, I don't think now's the time to do that.
I'm not suggesting that either, but I think that we may need, as you have suggested, diversify away from that a little bit because they have, it's such a big impact on the portfolio. There's going to be periods like that.
There's going to be a correction coming up. Who knows when that's going to happen?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know when that's going to happen, but, knock on wood, the expectation is when we have that market correction that BBH is going to do very well. Coming out of that market correction, I think, is the proper time then to rebalance into something that has a little bit different type of fund characteristics to it. And we'll look at what's available at that time and make recommendations on it. I think long term BBH is a very, very good manager. But I do agree with you here, short term that's hurt. That's really
hurt. That's a big number. 7 basis points on $6 million.
Right. It's a big number. There's no doubt about it. And Royce Premier has been a disappointment also. One of the things that's happened, though, this last quarter, and when I get into the charts on the, with the total fund chart, it'll be pointed out, but there's been a shift that's starting to occur where active management is beginning to outperform the indexes. Unfortunately, it's been towards the growth side of that equation all of a sudden here, but once the market tends to settle out, I think, real earnings and valuations are to come back into play, and that side should have a positive impact. The thing that has, helped us, if you will, over time frame or some of the other portfolios, one of the things that hurt last year was our allocation to Harbor International, which underperformed the MSCI World XUS for the year. The first quarter, though, they did incredibly well. They're coming out of that. Their allocations to Europe are beginning to pay off. If we go back over a 5-year time frame with them, they had above average returns. So I think they're a very good manager too. And long term they've had very good results. I could get you to move now to page 21. Look at what happened to fixed income and some of the other asset classes. For the trailing year, total fixed income, we were up almost 4%, just slightly below the intermediate aggregate index. Here again, we're at the shorter end of that from standpoint of duration, which has played, our conservatism in this area has not yet paid off, but I believe it will pay off, as we move forward and interest rates start to rise. And the press, or at least what we're hearing now, is that everybody's expecting sometime towards the end of this year that interest rates are going to start to rise. I don't know when that's going to happen. Actually, I thought it would have happened a couple of years ago. But when it does happen, we've got the structure here to be able to move through that time frame because these portfolios with basically a 2-year duration will replenish themselves during a rising interest rate environment, whereas core portfolios with a 5 or 6-year duration are going to have a very, very difficult time, especially since those core portfolios have mortgages in them that are going to spike to the right, and that duration is going to go from 5 to maybe 10 years because no one's going to be refinancing low interest rate mortgages.
From a practical standpoint, do we use the dividends and so forth come off this to meet our funding obligations? We're not reinvesting them in these vehicles. Are they being used to pay our expenses?
We have income being flowed off, and Barry's got information for you. But, yes, we're using income to try and alleviate the problem of having to sell securities.
I thought that was correct,
yes.
But I did.
And that's one of the things, I mean, that I've talked to you over the time frame, that we all have some sort of biases. My bias is towards trying to find things that have an income component. If we got an income component, then we don't have to wait for capital gains to be able to get something out of it, because that income has two benefits. One, you can pay your expenses, you can pay your beneficiaries off of the flow of income without having to tap into the capital structure. And two, if you have excess income, that can be reinvested, so you get a compounding effect out of that income that's not really there with something.
What is our dividend flow now, a year?
John? Well, in the last year, it was the last 12-month period, it was $380,000 total.
Okay, so we're still $1.3 million short, roughly.
That's correct.
So yeah, well, with where interest rates are.
Yeah, oh, I know it.
Yeah. So, yes, it doesn't.
You could go to 100% fixed income and still not get to the money you need.
Yeah. So our reinvestment opportunities are not.
And now they're not there. They're not there. But we do have things in here other than the fixed income that's throwing off income. By the way, one of the things we did a little over a year ago, as you remember, was get involved with the PIMCO TAC Ops, which over the last year did very nicely for us. Almost 9.5% return. MLPs, as I stated earlier, because this is energy infrastructure, it's the baby getting thrown out with the bathwater. We had a commodity problem in energy, and it rolled down to storage and transportation of the commodity. Quite frankly, the only thing that really should have impacted that would have been the inflation clauses in those contracts. So we don't get the inflation, big deal. You still get to charge, for the toll road of getting the commodity to the marketplace, because I don't think there's going to be any reduction in the amount of oil that's used because it went down to $53 a barrel. Still going to be pumped to the various distribution facilities and utilized, and that's what drives the earnings of the MLP area, because we're involved in that midstream infrastructure part of MLPs, not in exploration or anything else. And we're getting like 5.25% income out of that also. The real estate, like I said, had a fabulous year, up almost 25%. Far and away the best performing area of the portfolio. And I do believe that it'd be a good idea, and I'll get with John about rebalancing those two items, because with the sale of the MLPs, I think it's a buying opportunity there. And that pretty much takes care of it, unless you'd like to go back and look at any of the individual years. It was a tough year. 5 years we're still on track. 3 years we're on track. Last year was a little bit of underperformance. but I do like, you know, the team going forward, and I think it's going to, you know, play out very nicely for us. I would like for you to turn, if you will, if there are no questions on that.
Anybody have a question?
You had hit upon, let me ask one question. You had hit upon this, and we've been looking a lot at the sort of the underperformance of Royce Premier.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, we've talked about it, but I mean, does it get to the point that at some point we need to think about?
Here again, they're just, you know, this one is just, I think that Royce Premier is the same type of thing that, you know, we've got with BBH, and is that there, it's a conservatively run portfolio that did extraordinarily well when the market was in distress, and participated to some degree when the market came out of it. But as the market's transitioned into more expectation than actual results, they've really lagged, and that's been disappointing. Here again, I think it would probably be appropriate to either trade out into something else, but I don't want to do that in front of where we are in the market. Well, this market is has been long, a very long time frame. Does it have another year? Most likely. 2 years? Possibly. But there are all kinds of things that could cause a sell-off. And if there is a sell-off, I'd much rather be positioned with conservative portfolio.
It's $2 million, roughly.
Yeah, about 10%, 11%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's had a tough couple 5 years or so.
Yeah, it is. Well, we have, I'll find the page, and you can just turn to that real quick, and then we'll go back to the others. But on page 28... you can see that back in 2009, you know, they had a very good year. 2010, they had a decent year. 2011, when the market had some problems, they had significant outperformance. And then as the market tended to go up, 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 they underperformed. I'm in hopes, quite frankly, that when the market tends to, or if it goes sideways, if they start to underperform, if it goes down, I mean overperform, if it goes down, they overperform. And, you know, once they move to the top of these bars, then that's the time to talk about maybe having different strategies.
Yep.
I've got, you know...
We bought them in 2010, which was at the top. And 11 was a bad year. 12 was okay. 13, okay. And then last year.
And there was one of the first ones that we diversified
into. Yeah.
And yeah.
They had Harbor. We did that one in Harbor at the same time.
Right.
The two things we did.
4-1 2010 was Ross. And... Harbor was well, they were both the same time.
They should have been. We did it, I think, at the same time.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't have the data yet, but I think that the diversification into those two versus staying totally with BlackRock probably paid off for you. So we don't have BlackRock anymore. Anyway, let me move back to page 24, which is what I wanted to spend a couple of minutes on. And this is the first time in 30 years of doing performance evaluation of total plans and for clients that I have ever seen this happen. And what I'm referring to is that the median total fund for the quarter was 2.4%. The S&P 500 was up 1%. The aggregate bond index was up 1.6%. The Russell 3000 was up 1.8%. There had to be a significant, shift in, or not shift, but a significant portion of plan assets and growth securities for this to have ever happened. I mean, for the median return to be over what the stock market itself did, not sectors of the stock market, the total stock market, because you would think that just as many plans that are in growth would be in value. Just as many plans had long-dated bonds, had short-dated bonds, all of those types of things coming into account, I have just, it just is mind-boggling. I would have thought the median plan would have been something like 1.5, 1.6%, which would have been like a combination of what happened to the stock and bond market, because that's where most of the assets are. Could have been that some of them have, significant allocations to real estate, significant allocations to private assets, tremendous under-allocation, if you will, to energy. Because if you had an allocation to energy, it would have pulled you down like it pulled us down for the quarter. But that's a significant... very significant. So, I mean, from the standpoint of what, energy had the biggest impact on our overall return for the quarter and for the year, and just translates out all the way across the full, 5-year time frame. That will recover itself. Like I said, we're involved in the infrastructure. The infrastructure is going to get their money at the end of the day from transportation and storage of that energy, whether it's $53 a barrel or $100 a barrel. They get a little bit more if it's $100 a barrel because of inflation,
Do they have escalators in any of those contracts and MLPs? Do they?
And it's primarily from, the inflation factors in energy. They get, a bump if the price goes up. They still get the base rate for transportation and storage. So I think we're going to see that recover as everybody goes, well, yeah, here it goes. And if, there happens to be a significant increase in the commodity, then it'll just probably hit immediately. I was at an economic luncheon last week. Professor Dotzer at Texas A&M was talking about things, and he said that the real, the guys, I don't know, turban, whatever you want to call that headdress they wear, the Arabs anyway, their real need is for energy to be over $80 a barrel. They can drive it down, trying to run out all of this stuff that's happened here in the U.S. And they can do that because their incremental cost is so low. But for it to be under $80 a barrel with the their constituents, the rich guys are going to have to write the check to pay for continuation of their standard of living. Which it's is over high. $80 a barrel. They can do it. I mean, they're still making money, and they their constituents are all happy. Gets under $80 a barrel, they either cut back on what's happening with their economy, or they write the check. So he's saying that it's going to go back up, number one. But number two, if it was to stay down around, $50, $60 a barrel, we're going to do just fine because Colorado School of Mines, Oklahoma University, Texas A&M are putting out new engineers and petroleum people that are going to solve the problem. And once that happens, they're going to be in trouble. So I don't know. I mean, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong, but I don't see energy staying down.
You know what I hear out in the oil patches, the guys that have got oil, they're developing their property. They're not doing as much exploration, especially wildcatting type thing. They're going where they got more of a cinch.
Right.
And they're okay at that, doing that in the $50, $60.
Yeah.
They're not making a lot of money, yeah, but they're not going broke either.
Yeah, right. Instead of 100% return, they're making 20%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still good.
Yeah. So, and I totally agree. Oil's not going to stay. I like it when I have to pay for it, but it ain't going to stay there.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that that portion of the portfolio is going to recover. I think that the current lineup of managers is in the long term is going to be very positive for us. I know that we had a little bit of underperformance here recently, and I don't Bill's not here, and he is a big proponent of indexing. But I do think that when we have a downturn in the market, that active management pays off. That pretty much concludes what I wanted to talk about, unless there's some other questions on performance or specific managers. I know we talked about BBH and Royce, Harbor. You know, as I said earlier, has done very well. They had a little bit of a underperformance for the year. They had a very nice, last quarter, and they've had very good returns, out over the 3, 4, and 5 year time frame.
Ready to move on? No motions required.
No, nothing. Just report only.